Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, covering all things Star Wars animation. And we are here tonight to talk about Season 4, Episode 15 of The Clone Wars, Deception. And joining me tonight are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Jonathan.
He's back.
And Master Collect Them All, your podcast enhancer, Barrett.
It's good to be back, Rockstar. Good to be back.
All right. Now we are kicking off the first episode in a four-part arc. This arc, I think, is going to lead us down into a dark place. But let's go around and get everyone's thoughts on this episode. And we'll start with Jen.
Ooh, I don't know if I'm the right person to start with because I did not really care for this episode. For the most part, I've been really, really liking this season. I feel like it's probably one of the strongest seasons we've had yet. It's had some of my favorite episodes yet. It's my favorite arc this season yet. This one, not so much. I had a really hard time suspending my disbelief because things kept happening that made no sense to me. And I feel like the writers weren't maybe familiar enough with the Star Wars universe or just weren't thinking things through in some cases, because I just kept wondering, what about this? And that makes no sense. And but he just said, I had a really hard time with this episode. It's not one of my favorites at all.
All right. Very interesting. How about Jonathan?
Well, I kind of have a different point of view on this episode. The first time I watched it, I enjoyed it a lot. I just thought it was just kind of fun. I liked seeing some of the pulling in from previous seasons and other episodes. But then I watched it a second time to kind of take notes in preparation for the podcast. And then, like Jen, I started going, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Or, I don't know about that. And I find myself liking it less. So, I mean, again, first viewing, it was fun. After that, it just started crumbling for me.
All right. And Barrett.
You know, I really enjoyed this episode. I'm kind of interested to hear your guys' opinions on what didn't really make sense, or, you know, what didn't feel Star Wars-y enough to you, because I really felt that this was a pretty solid episode. I mean, there's some mulligans out there, like, you know, why do they feel the need to make Anakin not a part of the plan? But, you know, it kind of goes along with episode 3, you know, it kind of goes along with what we already know about the Jedi, how they're doing kind of these undercover things, you know, and I liked it, but I'm very interested to hear your guys' opinions on what was disagreeable about this episode.
All right. Now, I'm with Barrett. I actually enjoyed this episode. Now I can see, going back and doing it repeatedly, how you start to kind of nitpick a little bit. And it is hard to suspend your disbelief for a moment, since you know that there's no way anything is going to ever happen to Obi-Wan. But all in all, it was a fun episode. It was very intriguing. So let's go ahead and kick it right off with, well, what happens in the beginning, where Ahsoka, Anakin, and Obi-Wan being ambushed by a sniper on a landing pad.
Okay, and this was one of those things that I kind of had a bit of an issue with the second viewing. The first viewing, you get kind of wrapped up in it, but I understand, you know, in hindsight, that Obi-Wan obviously was going to let this happen, that this, he knew that this was a setup and was going to just sort of play along. But the fact that neither Anakin or Ahsoka's danger sense kind of went off when a sniper is, you know, zeroing in on them doesn't make a lot of sense. We've seen in other times where they pick up on these things, where they can tell it's coming. That's the whole point of, you know, Jedi sort of precognition. And I was like, well, why not? Did they have it turned off? Is it running low on batteries? What's going on?
Okay. Did anybody else have a thought on that?
I just want to know, like, did they pay the sniper to miss, or were they actually going to let him shoot at Obi-Wan? Because that's kind of a gamble that I would not have been willing to take.
But you can kind of see it on Obi-Wan's face, too, when he's hiding, and then he decides, you know, to step on out. He kind of takes a deep breath because, you know, he really doesn't know if this guy's going to shoot him in the face or if he's going to go for a chest shot. But, he, you know, luckily he tries to go for his heart, and Obi-Wan is protected. But Jonathan, you know, I had that same question that Jedi are supposed to be able to sense danger. Now, we really don't know what their quote unquote Spidey sense is like. We don't know if they can sense it right before it's going to happen. We don't know if they sense it as it's happening. You know, it kind of varies. It kind of varies on their mood, too. If they're aware of what's going on, as in if they're in a battle sequence or a battle, then of course they're reaching out with the Force, and their senses are a little bit heightened. And so maybe they'd be able to detect danger a lot closer than what they were doing there. They were kind of joking around when we first see them. And, you know, Ahsoka's making a joke about would they rather be doing this or training younglings. So it kind of comes as a surprise. And if they're not using the Force at that time to throw their senses out there, they might not be aware of something like that. And they might have their guards down and people can sneak up on them. We've seen that in Order 66. I mean, most famously with Ki-Adi Mundi. You know, he's got his whole troopers in the back, and they stop and take aim at him before he's able to realize what's going on. So I kind of gave him a mulligan on that, thinking that they had their guards down and they weren't looking for a fight. So maybe somebody could make the jump on them.
Well, I'm going to kind of look at the Ki-Adi Mundi thing in episode 3. The way I've always viewed it is, you know, the Ki-Adi Mundi is running with the Galactic Marines behind him, and then he stops and he turns and he sees them all aiming. So it's not just like they shoot him in the back. It's he tries to respond and tries to defend himself and they overwhelm him. The way I've always understood, and this maybe is my own sort of projection onto this, but the way I always understood the Jedi, or the, you know, being able to use the Force to, you know, perceive danger, is that you pick up malicious intent. And that's how you know that you're going to get shot at and you need to defend yourself. So I still think, again, maybe it's just me having a hard time kind of just giving them that mulligan. I can see that, and it didn't, and especially the first time, it didn't prevent me from kind of rolling with it. But, you know, again, in repeat viewings, and this is something that I guess I've always had kind of a question about in watching the series and in watching Star Wars in general. It's like the Force powers seem to be so on again, off again. Sometimes they're working great. Other times they weren't. We'll get to this maybe in a little bit later. But when Anakin, after Obi-Wan is shot and Anakin is chasing the speeder, you know, you get the scene where he's right behind him, and we've seen him move a lot faster and put on a burst of Force speed, but he doesn't. He just kind of like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to stop running now. And he's almost within arm's length of the speeder. So why didn't he just, you know, put on a burst of speed and jump on it?
I would say that definitely there were some Force powers being powered down at the beginning of this episode, because like Jonathan, I've always thought that it was kind of a radar sense that the Jedi were supposed to sense malicious feelings being directed at them. And that was kind of off. And then I agreed with Anakin not being able to catch the speeder, but the real culmination of where it was just like they turned the switch off on everybody's Force powers was with Obi-Wan's so-called quote-unquote death, that Anakin can't sense him. Yes, he took the vital slowing agent or whatever, but still, I mean, that's always been a big thing. Millions of people on Alderaan who Obi-Wan never met were snuffed out of existence, and he felt that. So somebody as close as Obi-Wan to Anakin not really being dead, you think he would definitely have a read on that. And I'm just, when we got to the hospital after the funeral and Obi-Wan and Mace and Yoda were chit-chatting about it, I really felt that they just glazed on that too much. And yes, this might be one of those episodes where people write us later and tell us we're nitpicking a cartoon, but there were some real issues in this one that kind of bothered me, and that was really one of them.
Well, kind of going with the Anakin sense, the thing I think that bothered me most of this whole episode as far as like Force sense, and I know I'm jumping ahead and I'm sorry, is when Obi-Wan's already been transformed and Anakin goes and collects him, thinking he's the bounty hunter. How does Anakin not recognize Obi-Wan's Force sense? Yeah, his face looks different. Yeah, his voice looks different. But his Force sense is the same. And Anakin knows that so well, basically lived together for over 10 years. He should have been able to pick up on that.
I think you guys are missing a point. The dark side clouds everything. Anakin totally believes that Obi-Wan is dead. They kind of give you a line there where Yoda says that, you know, this isn't going to work. Anakin is going to feel something is wrong. But if Anakin is thinking about his sadness and his anger and wanting to kill somebody, you know, his he's not at peace with himself. He's not calm. He's using anger. So his force sensitivity could be off. So I gave him that mulligan as well, that, you know, if Anakin really thinks that this guy is the killer, you know, he even says, you know, I'd kill you right now if it wasn't for the man that you killed, would rather see you rot in jail. So he's not using his mind. He's not using his senses. They kind of give a look. Ahsoka kind of gives a look like she knows. And I'm wondering if down the road in when the arc develops, you know, we see that Ahsoka is in on it, too, because at first when Obi-Wan falls off the building and Ahsoka is the one that, you know, is there with him first, and Anakin says what happens, she doesn't say he's dead. She just kind of gives a look. And in the second part where Anakin finds Cardine, you know, Obi-Wan in disguise, Ahsoka kind of gives Anakin another look. So I'm not sure that Ahsoka didn't know, because she wasn't angry. She wasn't blinded by her emotions.
See, that bit that Jonathan brought up, though, that's where it really, I feel like, started really contradicting things. A lot of the other stuff, like the danger sense and, you know, sensing if someone's dead or not, that's kind of played with. That's never really been ironed out. It's a lot of EU stuff, and we know how they kind of take EU with a grain of salt in this show sometimes. But the thing where Anakin had the disguised Obi-Wan in, like, with his hand, like, holding him, like, face to face, like, within inches of each other, the fact that he couldn't detect that, that's where I started to have a really hard time, because that's something we've seen in the movies. And Vader on this, you know, on the Death Star, amidst all these people, could sense Obi-Wan after however many years of not having him around. He could pick him up then, and he was a Sith at that point. He was full of the dark side, and he should have been thinking only with emotions. And that's where I was really having a hard time starting to focus. And like, this kind of thing kept happening in this episode for me, where I'd be trying really hard to get back into it, and then something would just derail it again. And it was really kind of frustrating, because there's some really interesting stuff that's going on here. The idea of, like, the higher-ups in the Jedi Council basically duping Anakin for their own benefit, like, that's really a fascinating concept. I would love to see where they're going with this. I feel like they executed it in such a way that had me just shaking my head a lot.
I was trying to figure out why they were duping Anakin. What the point? I mean, it didn't seem like this mission had anything to do with Anakin. That, like, they would only convince people, because the bounty hunter was already gone, so having Anakin being all upset would convince some passersby. Maybe it'll come up in the next three episodes. I'm hoping it will. But I don't really understand why it was so important to fool Anakin.
Well, they're the heroes of the war, aren't they? They're, like, inseparable. It's always Anakin and Obi-Wan. It's in the Revenge of the Sith book. That's something I always remember really vividly, is them being the heroes of the war, and they're, like, inseparable. And so one would think that if one of them was killed, people would be looking to the other one to see what was going to happen, because, you know, you lose a partner in that sense. It's a pretty big thing to be dealing with. So that part didn't... I mean, it bothered me. I feel like it was a horrible thing for them to do to Anakin, and really cold. But I also thought that was really interesting, because that's kind of the character Mace Windu is, and he's the one really pushing this, and he's the one that Anakin has a really hard time trusting. And I thought that dynamic was really fascinating, and I would like to have seen that pushed a little bit more. But there could have been a better way to do this. Instead of having Anakin interacting directly with Obi-Wan in this disguise, I would have maybe had him off somewhere on another planet, so it would be more believable.
Yeah, talking about playing with a wounded snake, they've already have questions about Anakin and, you know, how he's not being able to control himself, to control his emotions. But I find it very interesting that Yoda is the one that has doubts in the plan. You know, he's the one who says to Mace, you know, we're treading on a dark path here. And Mace convinces him, says, no, we needed Anakin to, you know, we needed to do this. We needed to kill a Jedi. This is part of the plan. And Yoda brings up doubt again when they go and talk to Obi-Wan in the medical room, and Obi-Wan is the one who tells Yoda, no, Anakin's reaction is key into this. So I was like, wow, you wonder why Anakin feels in episode 3 that he can't trust the Jedi, because we have stories like this where they're fooling him, where they don't trust him, where they feel like they have to leave him out of these important plans. And you start feeling for Anakin, you start feeling for the guy. And, you know, if my best friends were plotting things and felt like they couldn't trust me with vital information, I would feel kind of upset myself. Maybe not ready to go to the dark side, but I would be upset nonetheless.
Yeah, there was a couple of the points you guys have brought up jumped out at me that with right there with Barrett, that down the line, this is going to come out that this is how this went down. And this is going to be a big portion of, I think, why Anakin feels so alienated in episode 3. So as far as playing to that, I think they've done a good job. As far as why Anakin was left out of the plan, I really hope that we do see it come to fruition in the next three episodes, that there's more of a point why Anakin's reaction had to be believable. I'd like to see them work with that. It was kind of rushed and just kind of thrown out there. I mean, it was important for all the Jedi and three senators to see him all pouty at a funeral. I can't believe that. There has to be something more. So I'm hoping, as good as a lot of this season has been, I'm hoping that they're going to give us some nice follow-up on that.
Speaking about the funeral, I love that they had Satine crying there. Something that was just one thing I really did just get a kick out of.
Yeah, it was a very interesting choice of the non-Jedi funeral guest. It was Padme, Satine, and then Mon Mothma for no good reason. You know, she's just hanging out.
But I found it very interesting that this is the first Jedi we've seen, the first Force user we've seen that hasn't been burned in a funeral pyre. They actually buried him underground.
No. They burned him. They put him in the chamber, and then the beam went down and cooked him. That's the way I took it.
Oh, I took it that beam was kind of the beacon of light, you know, that would shine forever. You know, not that they burned him, because I didn't see any smoke or anything. I thought they just kind of locked him in, buried him, and that was the beam of light in the Jedi Temple as remembrance for Obi-Wan.
No, that was the Jedi Temple incinerator right there.
Hmm.
Interesting. I have to look at that again. I expected to kind of like form maybe a hologram of him, maybe some kind of memorial, but then we'd just stay to beam. Then we were on to the next scene by then, so I stopped caring.
I assume that they didn't take Qui-Gon back to Coruscant because, you know, that's a long trip and that's kind of gross. But I figure this is the way that they do it if the Jedi happens to be around the temple if they get killed. So I didn't think of it as a pyre. I thought that was some sort of like, you know, memorial light or the equivalent of a tombstone. But I like the idea that they cremated him. I don't really know. I didn't really put that much thought into it. I was trying to look at the characters in the room with them and their reactions. I was kind of more focused on that.
And if they did cremate it, what body did they cremate? Who do they? It could be a body down there that they've actually, somebody volunteered for that.
Well, it was obviously somebody else. Obi-Wan was in the hospital. Or something else.
Well, yeah, Obi-Wan's in the hospital getting ready for his flowy haircut.
Yes. So let's talk about this hospital visit when we find out Obi-Wan's alive. We've skipped around a little bit, and there's two points that we're getting to right now. First of all, will be the hospital conversation with Obi-Wan where, yes, he gets his haircut with a flowy, and then he has a very face-off/inner-space moment and gets a new face.
Am I the only one
who got the inner-space moment?
No,
I thought you were going to say Total Recall. You got the Total Recall moment.
Well, I'm with Jen. That was just weird. It didn't – that to me didn't feel very Star Wars. I don't know why, but it just didn't – that just didn't fit with, I guess, my perception of the Star Wars universe.
Oh, but we've seen this before. We haven't seen the needle being injected into the neck and the face change, but we've seen this in episode 2 with the bounty hunter, you know, the changeling. Her face kind of changed exactly like that without the pain.
Yeah, but she was a Claudite, and they're a shape-shifting race.
Right.
Even that I have issue with.
She was a Claudite. She was a shape-shifting race, but we have seen this in Star Wars before. It was my point, is that in episode 2... we've seen the bubbling of the face and changing into, to make it to a different visage. So, you know, this is pretty Star Wars. It's not like it was a new thing. What was the new thing was the mini spider droid he had to swallow in order to change his voice. I don't think we've seen that before.
No, that was very new. And that was the next part I was going to get to. We jumped from the hospital to the cantina where our bounty hunter friend is celebrating his successful assassination of a Jedi and comes face to face with himself and Mace Windu. And after chatting a little bit with Mace Windu's mechanical tennis ball, turns out that it's a voice manipulator that Obi-Wan has to swallow.
I want to know how he did that without choking, because that thing was like the size of a golf ball. Like, that was pretty impressive.
Well, I think he just had to get in his mouth and then it crawled down, because it was it had to go to his larynx, not his stomach, so he couldn't have actually swallowed it.
There's not a whole lot of room in there. Like, where was that sitting? That's what I want to know. Is it just like hanging out by his larynx? Because that leaves like, I feel like he should have been wheezing or something. There shouldn't have been a whole lot left in there for space.
I'm just wondering how they're going to get that out, because, I mean, you think kidney stones are bad.
But how cool was it to see the light in his throat kind of moving around and adjusting itself into the right position? You know, he kind of lifts up his neck and you see the light going around. And
but I have to think that this device that Obi-Wan has swallowed, it's going to come up in the next three episodes. Something's going to happen. And it could be that something that they've completely, that they won't. It won't be an issue. But I have to think that at some point they're going to play with that. Obi-Wan's going to get hit in the throat. Obi-Wan's going to get electrocuted in some way. This thing's going to malfunction and he's going to spit it up and all of a sudden he's going to sound like Obi-Wan Kenobi again. And something's going to happen with this whole disguise. I have to think.
So they're going to be ripping off Face Off again then.
Yes, they're going to rip off Face Off, or they're going to be ripping off Inner Space where too much stress makes him revert to his normal face. Something is going to happen there. And it's all going to go to pot. Probably the fourth episode. Or maybe the third, and then he'll have to be rescued by, oh, by the way, Anakin. Kenobi's really still alive. Go save him. So Obi-Wan has made his transformation, and he is arrested by Anakin and Ahsoka. And this was one thing that made me kind of stop, was when Ahsoka looks him in the eye. I think she figured it out. If not, she has an inkling just from that look.
No, I think Brent said that earlier, and I caught that too. There was some sort of connection there. I mean, they changed his face, but I don't know. Did they change his eye color? I didn't look that closely.
I don't think so.
I think Ahsoka's in on it. I think Ahsoka's in on it. Just from her reactions, like I mentioned before, as well as the fact that when they were in the quote-unquote funeral for Obi-Wan, you know, she does mention to Plo Koon, you know, I'm worried about Anakin. It's almost like they've told her, you know, keep an eye on him. You know, make sure he doesn't do anything too rash. You know, we have to make sure that Anakin stays grounded. So I think we're going to find out that Ahsoka is in on the espionage.
If she is in on it, though, like, I hope they really devote some time to Anakin's reaction then, because he is going to be so pissed at the end of this. And if he's not, I will be completely shocked. I feel like he should be, like, towering rage, livid, breaking stuff, pissed by the end of this.
Oh man, I agree with you. It's going to be amazing if he doesn't shoot force lightning out of his fingertips when they tell him this. You know, I don't want to be the Jedi to have to tell Anakin that, you know, we fooled you. It's going to have to come from Mace, or it's going to have to come from Yoda or someone, because he is going to be understandably upset.
Well, they could always have Ahsoka tell him, and that's what happens to her. That's why she's not in episode 3.
And Lux will have to come down and save her.
So Obi-Wan is taken to jail, and we meet the being that all of this is about. All of this is because Morallo Evol is behind a plot to kidnap the Chancellor, and Obi-Wan is going to try to get in good with him. Now, this doesn't seem like a well-thought-out plan to me. I don't know if that's just hoping that having killed a Jedi is going to score you enough points with a guy who's in prison who is plotting something major like that. It seems a little out there. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's for all the other gaps this plot was trying to cross. This seemed to be just really unrealistic.
This right here is probably the part that bothers me the most, this plot hole. This is where I really had a very difficult time. And there was some stuff with Cabine, but that was more minor. Like, I probably could have dealt with that. But this right here, like, makes, to me, no sense. And that's why I was having a really hard time. These are peaceful people. We see a couple of times in here where Obi-Wan does not want to hurt anybody. He holds back. He doesn't shoot the clone guard, stuff like that. And yet the Jedi Council is willing to put him in here, go through all this subterfuge, get all of these other people injured and killed to try and work with this guy, when we know that they have, like, interrogation methods and things like that. They're kind of unsavory, but it's only harming the one person they're trying to interrogate, whereas this is... there are a lot of people that get killed in this episode just to get this guy's information. And I feel like this is not really something I think the Jedi would be okay with. It really bothered me.
Jen, I'm right there with you. When the clone troopers were dropping, I'm thinking, wow, they're letting a lot of people die for this information that they could have gotten out of Morallo or whatever his name is, the same way they got the information out of Cad Bane back in season 2.
Evil Morale. I love the names. I mean, I love that name. Morallo Evol should sound really ridiculous, but it's actually a really cool name. And we have seen this species before, right? Wasn't Ossi Sobek from the Citadel arc?
Yes, he was
one of these evil Morale guys. But I think you guys are missing a little something. This is the first part of an arc. And I don't think, you know, this is just speculation, but I don't think that the Jedi would put together this plan. In order to kidnap the Chancellor, you're going to have someone on the inside to help you. And I think that the Jedi know that there are spies everywhere. And I think they're trying to weed out some of these spies that are infiltrating the Republic. And it's not just Morallo Evol character. I think there's other characters here that we're going to see that are going to pop out. But as far as Morallo trusting a new person that comes in, I think that we're going to find that you need kind of a scapegoat. You need kind of someone who's going to take the fall when a plan goes on. You know, it's not Morallo Evol is not going to take the fall. And it sure is not going to be Cad Bane who's going to take the fall for kidnapping someone. So they kind of need that fall guy, someone they can kind of trust, someone who has a reputation who when it all comes down, you can say, oh, he did kill Obi-Wan. Okay, he is capable of kidnapping the Chancellor. So I think that's going to play a part of it, that he has to be the fall guy. You need a fall guy in your plan.
Now, Morallo is about to trust Ben, but he gets kind of shot down by Cad Bane. But Cad isn't the only nefarious individual that we get reunited with here in prison. The next day in the, I guess, the cafeteria or wherever they're eating, we get to see Baby Boba again with a haircut, at least not this time. He doesn't look quite so much like a hippie. And we see Bosk back too, and they kind of get into a little bit of a tussle, and this turns out to be the instigation of a riot that Cad Bane and Morallo Evol are using to cover their escape.
Okay, now, here's part of the episode where I kind of scratched my head. They tried Boba as an adult, you know, because Boba's what? He can only be, what, 12, 13 years old at this time? And he's in here with these thugs, man. You know, these hardcore criminals. He's in there with Carcadons. He's in there with all these terrible characters from Coruscant. And, you know, he's this little kid. So I'm like, either they charge him as adult, Boba is hard as nails. But then you have the scene where Bosk defends Boba. You know, you have a problem with Boba, you have a problem with me. And so then I was like, oh, okay, so he has a protector there. You know, somebody is eating his cocktail fruit. And so it kind of makes it okay. But I thought, wow, they put this little kid in here with all these dangerous criminals. I had a big chuckle about that.
Come on, Brett. He took down a Venator Star Destroyer. Boba pretty much did that single-handedly, blew up the Star Destroyer. I mean, they're not going to put him in the Republic juvie system after that.
He did try to kill Mace Windu. So I think that might get you tried as an adult. I'm pretty sure.
Well, I just want to clear something out. So this isn't kind of a federal prison or penitentiary. This is a local kind of Coruscant prison, right? This is for the people that have done wrong and have been arrested on that planet. Am I wrong about that? Because it would seem like you would have separatists as well as common criminals in there. You know, because Boba's not a separatist. The bounty hunters, they're not separatists.
It's not a military prison. I didn't get that sense. It was definitely more of like a, you know, sort of a penitentiary as opposed to a Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, sorry.
I'm pulling in real world references here. Remember, though, they captured Bosk and Boba off world and they brought them to the world to incarcerate them. And was this the same place that Zero was?
That was going to be my next question. It seemed like they were holding Zero kind of in the city, right? We definitely didn't see this mushroom-shaped dome of the penitentiary where Zero was. But they did have the same kind of jail cell facade where you had the force field. You know, the ships have to fly up kind of to the entrance of the jail cell. And then the force field goes down and you take them in or out, the prisoners in and out. So it kind of had that same feel to it, but I'm not sure if this was the same one that Zero was in.
Oh, come on, Barrett. That was like season two. They didn't have in the budget to do the rendering for that prison back then.
I know. They still had Yoda still had big eyes back then. And
but to your point, this can't be just the local Coruscant prison because Bosk and Boba were captured way out somewhere else, not Coruscant. And even Cad Bane, when he was captured, was that on Coruscant?
Maybe this is just the prison where the Jedi are most affiliated with, so all their prisoners go here.
This is the Republic version of the Citadel. The really bads go here.
And it makes complete sense to keep your really bads on your capital planet. planet, where if they were to get out, they could really do the most damage.
Absolutely.
I didn't mention that they were going to have a jailbreak when everybody had to get out because they had all these people in jail. So I'm kind of feeling gratified that we finally got to see it.
But only three people got out.
That we saw. Who knows?
Right. We don't know, because I suspect that Boba got out, because I think we're going to see a lot more of this little young terrorist.
This little young terrorist. It's so nice when you say it that way, Barrett.
You know, the other thing I thought was interesting, and again, this could be just my perception, is the clone trooper guards are the Coruscant shock troopers from episode 3 with the red marking. And for some reason, I thought that they were more of the kind of Palpatine's elite troop. And they were kind of guarding the prison, and they really weren't very bright, were they?
No. In Barrett's scale of clone troopers acting more like stormtroopers, these guys were right up there with stormtrooper stupid.
Oh, yeah. They were very stormtrooper stupid, as well as they're taking orders from Morallo Eval, where they're kind of acting just like regular prisoners, where Morallo Eval has some sort of pull. He has juice with the guards, where he can take Cardeen and say, hey, you know, I want this guy to be in my bunkmate. Guards! You know, he calls him over when he's done with him. Guards! And the guards come get him. And I was like, what is going on here? You know, how much pull could this guy have that we just heard about?
Are these clones on the take? Because it makes no sense why they would do that. You would think that clones, we know that there is some individuality, but I don't think we've ever seen clones go so far as to be manipulated or paid off, or having a lot, responding to somebody in jail having a lot of pull. I think that's what he said.
But you have to wonder if they're receiving their orders to give this guy a little bit more freedom from Palpatine. I mean, remember, the plot in the end is for him to be captured by the Separatists. So this is what he wants. This plot we're going to see here, I'm fairly certain, is going to be foiled, and it's not going to come to fruition. It's not going to in any way lead to the plot we see at the beginning of episode 3, or the plot at the end of the micro series, may it rest in peace. I think this may be where he's getting this pull from. He's allowed to do certain things because deep down, it's what Palpatine wants in the end.
Can we get to their escape and how they got out?
That's where we're going right now. That's our wrap up here. So let's go right to it. So there's the riot, and we're gonna jump down the incinerator.
Well, Cad Bane said something interesting. He said, this isn't the first time I've gotten out of here. Did you guys catch that?
I did catch that. And he goes back to the same way he went before, and he's surprised that the locks changed. How does that work out for you?
Surprise! You've broken out here before. We didn't do any measures. You're going to have to, it's going to be that easy at the same time. That was kind of out of his character, where he was surprised that, that should have been in his plan. He should have anticipated that they were going to change the locks on him.
But that's all they did. Like, later, they there seems to be someone still alive in here. Open it up. And they just, that made me crazy.
Yeah, the clones that were in the incinerator, they have no sense of danger. It's like you could tell that they were just doing their mundane job, and even though there was a prison escape going on, you would think that they would be on high alert, but they're still kicking back, all surprised. That was pretty funny.
The other thing that kind of had me scratching my head is Cad Bane's like, okay, let's jump in here and it's going to take us down to the incinerator, and the other two were like, okay, sure, let's do that. I'd be like, wait a minute, you're putting me in this essentially coffin that they're going to send down to the incinerator and hope that they open it up, hope that they check that there's life signs in there before they put me to the flames. I'm not sure I'd be going with that one.
Yeah, that just struck me as weird. Why would there be a point between the morgue and the incinerator where the body bag or the casket or whatever the containers has to be opened again and handled again? And especially if that box gets open and somebody has to haul the dead body out of it, why is a guy sitting there eating a sandwich?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, it was a sandwich, not a donut.
It's just not right. That is not hygienic, my friend.
Yeah, Jonathan, I have to agree with you. These were the clones that had the leaks in their acceleration chamber. I mean, there is something definitely wrong with these clones, where they're just not very smart. They are getting to the dumb stormtrooper-ish ones that we all know and love from episode 4.
The special needs brigade.
So, despite their little debacle in the incinerator, Obi-Wan and his two partners in crime manage to escape, and they get in the cool little police cruiser ship, and I'm going to be with Barrett on this one. I want that ship. That's pretty cool.
With the little mesh bars between where Obi-Wan was sitting behind.
Yes, that was pretty cool.
That's how you could tell it was a police vehicle, because they had the mesh or the bars. You know, it's a police speeder. That was pretty cool. Yes, I need that. Whoever's Lucasfilm, I need that. That would be cool.
So our three escaped convicts, they borrow a ship from a Quarren on the landing bay and take off. And as they do, Obi-Wan kind of gets smacked around by Cad Bane for not shooting. And if we remember back to the riot and the ensuing escape, Obi-Wan was hesitant to fire and at one point flat out didn't shoot a clone. And Cad Bane took the shot, and then he said that his blaster had jammed. So right away, we're seeing Obi-Wan. There's a line Obi-Wan's not willing to cross. Did the Jedi really think about what kind of position they were putting Obi-Wan in? I mean, if we look back at other EU, we see where other Jedi have gone down this road, and mostly I'm thinking of Quinlan Voss, and it didn't go well for him, and he did some things that he really shouldn't have, and this is a position that Obi-Wan is getting thrust into. Now, is this the writers like that line that Quinlan had to dance on, and they're kind of borrowing that kind of storytelling, or are we really going to see some moral wrestling out of Obi-Wan here?
This is what's going to give Obi-Wan up, if it already hasn't, because this is where Obi-Wan is given the equivalent of the American three and not the German three, and people would and did notice. I mean, if Cad Bane did not trust him before, he definitely does not trust him now. And you would think that when Obi-Wan picked up the gun, the laser gun, the blaster, that you could change the blaster to stun. I mean, that's been established since the first movie, that, you know, set it to stun. Or Obi-Wan could have taken the butt of the blaster and knocked it over the guy's head. You know, he should have done something. But that's what's going to give him away, is that Obi-Wan was not meant for this. And, you know, it almost could have been that Anakin, they could have given Anakin the job, because, you know, Anakin would have shot the guy.
Well, it kind of makes me wonder about the plan, the original plan to send him in. And I was thinking about this the second time I watched it. Was the original plan to, like, send him in and get Obi-Wan to, like, buddy-buddy up to Morallo and get him to just reveal the plan? Or did they expect a jailbreak and that Obi-Wan would go along?
Well, I got the impression from his conversation over the communicator in the yard that he really thought Evol was going to just divulge his whole plan there, and that was going to be it. He's going to sit down, have a little chat in his bunk, and he was going to say, this is how it's going to go, and that's going to be it. This is kind of extenuating circumstances, and now he's decided he's not going to let this guy out of his sight until he knows what's going on. But who knows what all he's going to have to do to keep him from getting suspicious till that time comes.
Well, as far as the ending of the show, I did like how, even though Cad Bane obviously was suspicious, Morallo turned around and said to Obi-Wan, well, maybe there is a place for you in this plan. And Obi-Wan goes, well, I'm listening. And that's where they ended. I thought that was just a really cool way to kind of end the episode.
Yes, it did seem that at least Obi-Wan may finally get a portion of the information he's after. I guess we'll see how that plays out next
week. But it was real cool to see Obi-Wan get slapped like a stepchild, but he's always taking it, right? I mean, we just saw in the last arc, the Slaver's arc, where, you know, Obi-Wan's taking it to the chin until Anakin can get his stuff together. So, you know, Obi-Wan is always taking it he's always taking one for the Republic.
Well, we have a few voicemails, so let's jump right in and see what everyone else thought of Deception.
Hey guys, this is Will, aka Venator1229, on the forums, calling about the most recent episode of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Deception. And for being a non-clones versus droids episode, I thought it was probably one of the better episodes of the season or series. Just because of the awesome dialogue and pretty adult-themish storyline. Like, I think we reached a new height here in Clone Wars when talking about how it's not, like, aimed towards kids anymore. I thought it was great. I just have a few things I just want to talk about. The beginning, like, that was really tense. I mean, there wasn't really a lot of action, but, like, the storyline and the dialogue just made it really intense. Like, I felt it was just, it just seemed more emotional and more just, I don't know, because it just seemed like they were yelling way more and just, and seemed like the voice actors were just getting way more into it. I don't know, but the whole drama, it was just ruined by, like, you know, like, Obi-Wan obviously doesn't die because of episode 3 and beyond, so that kind of ruined it. But, I mean, if you were, like, watching Star Wars for the first time, like, you'd feel really bad about Obi-Wan and Anakin. And it just amazed me how, to what extent the Jedi Order, like, would do, to do a plan about trying to infiltrate the plot to kill Chancellor Palpatine, just how they would, like, lie to Anakin and make everyone believe that Obi-Wan was killed. And now time to get to the jail. I forget what his name was. I think it was Mualla or something. But I thought he was pretty cool. And something I noticed was when Obi-Wan first meets him in his jail cell and he's talking about bigger game than Jedi, if you look in the back towards the wall, you can see this postcard-looking thing that which appears to have, like, a cactus on it. So I thought that was kind of cool. Just, like, the whole jail scene I thought was really cool. Just, like, the convicts versus guards. It's like an old classic jail film I thought was really cool. And what I thought was also kind of funny is, like, Obi-Wan kept, like, finding, like, all these people he put in jail, like Boba and Bosk and Cad Bane. It's just like, oh, it's this guy who from, like, season 2 or season 3. And then the clones wearing, like, the Imperial officer hats. Like, I was not expecting that. That was pretty cool, though. Let's see, what else? But the thing I wanted to comment on was the visuals, like, in the beginning when the sniper was shooting and it was hitting the crates by Obi-Wan, like, the smoke, like, I bought the Up episode in high definition on iTunes, and just, like, the smoke and how it was done, like, with the visuals was just amazing, I thought. Also, what was kind of weird was when Obi-Wan was injected with the thing to make him look like that one guy, I forgot his name, just the seizure he was having, it just looked weird. It didn't look like Clone Wars animation, but I don't know, like I said, it's kind of, like, this episode kind of reached a new point within animation and dialogue and storyline. But, what I also liked was, like, you saw the red security clones with the red armor. It just gave the episode, like an episode 3 feeling. I really like that, too. The thing I also couldn't understand about this episode was, like, how could Anakin not sense that Obi-Wan was still alive? I mean, was just the feeling that thinking that Obi-Wan was dead, like, blocked his vision or something, or his senses? Because, you know, Anakin, as powerful as he was, he is the chosen one. Don't you think he could have sensed that Obi-Wan was still alive? I don't know. I think that covers everything. I'm really excited to see how, like, this whole storyline unfolds. And despite it not being a clones versus droids storyline, I think it's going to be really good. It's going to be a good way to finish off the season. But I think that's it. All right. See you guys. Bye.
Thank you. Well, one thing that you did mention, and I noticed that myself, was that the voice actors did seem to be getting very into their parts on this episode. And I also found it very interesting that James Arnold Taylor played Obi-Wan Kenobi, as he usually does, but he also played Riku Harding. So he did get to play his character before and after transformation. So he got to have a little fun and be a little gruffer, which is something that James Arnold Taylor doesn't normally get to do. So that was very interesting. And just a lot of the voice actors this time had multiple characters, which, of course, they always do. But we see some playing kind of both sides. We see Dee Bradley Baker doing Clone Troopers and back as Bosk, and we get to see Corey Burton doing Cad Bane and the Carcardon, and we even see Ashley Eckstein branching out a little bit in this episode. So everybody seemed to be having fun, and they went and brought Daniel Logan back as Boba Fett, even though it was just for, what, 3 sentences? So this was an impressive cast for this episode, at least.
Hi, guys. This is Anthony, and I'm 13. I'm calling about the Clone Wars episode Deception. First off, at Obi-Wan's funeral, I loved how we heard a little bit of the Imperial March when we saw Anakin's face. That was classic. And later on, when the clones put Obi-Wan in the cell, they said, "Home, sweet home." But after he talked with Eval and Cad Bane, Eval just calls the guards over and Obi-Wan is taken away. It just seemed a little odd. And with Eval, I'm not sure if those are green tattoos on one side of his face or if it was natural, but the animators did a really nice job on him. Cad Bane, he's pretty much my favorite character of the Clone Wars. It was great to see him back. I'd never noticed his ears before. I guess because he's usually wearing those force choke resistant tubes on his neck, but they were unusually small and round. I just thought it was interesting. And later on, Obi-Wan contacts Mace. He refers to himself as Ben. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he's ever been called that in the prequels. Also, when Boba comes into play, I didn't recognize him at all, especially because of the haircut, but I could definitely tell he'd grown. That's about it for this episode. Can't wait until the next. Bye, guys. Talk to you later.
Wow, this kid's smarter than most of the clone troopers in this episode. Well, Anthony, you bring up some very good points. Some things that, you know, we've kind of glossed over during the episode. You're right. You know, why would the clone trooper say, you know, home sweet home, unless it was their intention to keep him there in that cell? And then, you know, when Morale Eval called him over, all of a sudden, you know, it's not home sweet home anymore. And, you know, very astute that it did look like Boba, even though he was different. He had a nice, probably the same kind of flowy haircut Obi-Wan got. But he did look older. That was one of the things I had in my notes, that Boba seemed a little older. And maybe, you know, being locked up with a bunch of adult male criminals will do that to you. But anybody want to touch on the Ben? You know, because I kind of overlooked that. You're right. He's not Ben Kenobi until after Order 66, when he's sent with the task of watching over Luke on Tatooine. And then he takes over the name of Ben Kenobi instead of Obi-Wan.
I caught that. In fact, I rewound it to check to make sure I heard it, because I was like, wow. And I didn't get where that came from. It did, you know, was sort of kind of one of those head scratching moments. Maybe we'll find out more in the next couple episodes of, you know, why he's taking that moniker here. I did think it was also kind of interesting that, you know, in the yard when he's talking to Mace with this, you know, this little comlink that nobody noticed. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Hey, Republic Forces, this is Ryan, just calling in to talk about my thoughts of Deception. I really enjoyed this episode, and it started off with a bang, with a cool way to stunt Obi-Wan's death so he could go undercover. I thought the way they used the sniper to fake kill him was just really cool. And then the only thing that I had a problem with in this episode was Obi-Wan's transformation. The way he took that shot to make him look like the Rako Hardeen character was really weird, and the way he changed his voice was also really weird, but I was able to overlook that because of how cool the rest of the episode was. I thought Rako Hardeen was a really cool-looking person and just a really cool new bounty hunter, but I thought he kind of looked like a clone, just with a few different facial features. And once Obi-Wan, you know, like, changed into Rako Hardeen and then went to the prison, I thought, which was really cool, that he called the council and said, "Ben here," which really set up what happened in the original trilogy. Morale Eval, who was the one who's breaking out of prison and going to capture the Chancellor, he's just a really cool new separatist that we haven't seen many of them lately, besides Savage Opress, who's now just really a Knight Brother. It was really cool to see Cad Bane, Boba Fett, and Bosk back. Cad Bane obviously is going to have more of a role in this arc, but it was still cool to see Boba and Bosk back. And the escape scene at the end, which was just amazing, sold me on this episode. When they broke out and used the morgue to break out, which is really smart, and the way they stole the ship at the end, just really in Separatists and Cad Bane's way, that's just the way they would do it. So, really enjoyed it, and next week's episode, Friends and Enemies, looks like they're getting new costumes and then going to Nalhutta, so expecting some good things out of next week. So thanks for the great show. Talk to you next week. Bye.
I actually thought that transformation was pretty gross, too. That had me squirming. That and the thing climbing in his throat had me squirming in my chair. Like, I haven't been that uncomfortable watching the show since we had the Geonosian brain worms crawling in people's noses. Like, that was – they did a good job, like, getting this really visceral knee-jerk reaction out of me. That was not a pretty scene. So they did a good job. They made me squirm.
I squirmed more when that slop came out of that tube that they were trying to eat in the mess hall. I was like, oh, that looked like a mixture of oatmeal and snot. So that kind of made me squirm. But you're right. They did touch a lot of feelings in this episode one way or the other.
All right.
How's it going, Republic Forces Radio Network? This is Devis from the forums calling in, as per usual, to share what I thought about our most recent Clone Wars episode. Now, I suppose I should start this voicemail off with the phrase, open mouth, insert foot, for myself anyway, because I prematurely judged this episode by what we saw in the previews of Obi-Wan getting quote-unquote shot and killed. And I quickly learned, I think not even before the episode was half over, that was a big mistake. Because, Barrett, you called us out, man, good call on this, but that was definitely not the focus of the episode, as we saw. This episode, I mean, just the idea of it alone, having a Jedi who's they've been touted as being peacekeepers, go undercover and have, major reconstructive surgery to look like a prisoner to stop an assassination attempt, that in itself was pretty unique. And hello, a direct callback to the movie Face Off, starring John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, with Obi-Wan getting injected in the neck and having his features altered to look like Hardeen, which that shocked me, not to beat around the bush. That did surprise me. I mean, my jaw dropped a little bit just to see how they animated that and what happened. That in itself was pretty incredible. And this episode, again, was very good. I really look forward to how this arc plays out, because I think we get another three episodes in this, and I'll run through this quickly as possible, but the thing I thought about the most with, you know, around this time, well, this time last year, we got Witches of the Mist, which, as we all remember, or should remember, I guess I should say, gave us the reveal of Darth Maul, pardon the rhyme here, Darth Maul in the Crystal Ball. Now, growing up, Darth Maul was the baddest, the coolest prequel villain we got. And yes, Darth Maul / Anakin, he was cool, he was bad, but he didn't have a double-bladed lightsaber. He's no Darth Maul, we'll just leave it at that. So, like, with my birthday being on the 21st of January, which is today, last year, to see Darth Maul is going to be brought into this series, you know, I know this is a little bit silly to think, but I kind of took it as a de facto present, because, I mean, like I said, come on, it's Darth Maul. He's freaking amazing. And I saw it at least half a dozen times. How is Deception going to stack up to that? Will it stack up to Witches in the Mist? And as an episode, as a standalone episode, which I know it's not, and as an intro to a new arc, it's up there. I mean, it's not Darth Maul, but it is up there. Well, without going on any further, I look forward to hearing what you guys think about this episode. I love the podcast, as always, and I look forward to hearing what you guys think about it. Thanks. Take care, guys.
You know, Devis, you compare this to what we did get back when we came back from winter break last year, which was the Night Sisters trilogy. And I have to wonder, will this live up to? I mean, this has been a pretty good episode. My first viewing, I really enjoyed this episode, and Jonathan said that too. His first viewing, it was great. When you go back and look at it and think about it deeply, then it gets a little rougher. So will this be as good an arc as the Night Sisters? I have to wonder. And we've been under the impression this is going to be a four-part episode because, well, with Friends and Enemies next week, we know it is. But as far as the next one, it doesn't really sound like it. The episode 17 being called The Box, and something about a mysterious box that Grievous is delivering to Dooku that's intercepted by Anakin. I have to wonder if this one's going to wrap up next week. It'll be interesting to see.
Hey, RFRN, this is, I'm a new caller, Zach. First, I want to say I've been a long-time listener, but this is my first time calling in, and I'm calling in about Deception, the big prison escape episode, I guess you could call it. I'm glad they didn't try to make us think that, you know, Obi-Wan was dead, and it was, you know, very clear that he was still alive and stuff, that, you know, they weren't trying to say that he was dead and we wouldn't find out till like the third episode if he wasn't dead or not or whatever. Anyways, I thought that was kind of cool where he was like, he shaved all his hair off, and I'm like, well, he's not as wooden as what we once is, I guess. Anyways, and it's pretty nice that they're bringing in Obi-Wan for the last part of this season because he was had a big role in the Slaves of the Republic arc. And, you know, with the end season of Darth Maul coming back, you know, you think, well, Darth Maul's probably going to want revenge against Obi-Wan for splitting him in half. So, yeah, let's use Obi-Wan more. And I really like the cameos of Bob and Boba Fett, even though they were very brief cameos. And I didn't know if you guys noticed, but in the scene where Obi-Wan called the Jedi Council when he was, like, you know, exercising on one thing, took it over from Bosk, supposedly. He called in the Jedi Council and said, "This is Ben." I thought that was kind of interesting. All right, well, those are my thoughts on this episode. And from the previews, it seems like we're going to be getting something where we got with this Umbar arc. But, you know, like, who is this new bounty hunter? And what is? And he is trying to make a name for himself by the worst way possible. And it'd be nice if they would just show us previews for the next episode. All right. I'll call in again to give you my thoughts on the next episode. Bye.
You know, I thought it was funny what you said about Obi-Wan's beard not being so wooden when they cut it off. Wouldn't it have been hilarious if the droid had come up with, like, a sander to take off Obi-Wan's beard?
Sawdust flying.
What I found interesting about some of these voicemails is everybody looking at his arc. Like, this one is, in some ways, something they got to get through to get to the Darth Maul.
Yeah, it is interesting that that's kind of... Well, since they teased that we know this season is wrapping up with Darth Maul, it does kind of feel like that. Anything to give us between now and then that isn't just gold or isn't the Umbar trilogy caliber is just going to be like, all right, well, we have at least something good coming. So it's kind of their own fault for telling us that Darth Maul was definitely going to be at the end of the season. So they've set their own path there. They've got to live up to it now.
You're right. We have to get through this arc before we get to the Darth Maul arc. You know, it's kind of like how you have to eat your peas before you get a piece of cake. You know, no matter how good those peas are, you know, they might be drenched with butter, you still want that chocolate cake. There we go with my food references again.
Now, it'll be interesting to see how, like I said earlier, how this arc goes, because we know next week is Friends and Enemies, which, according to the Wikipedia, this still pertains to our current story arc. And it's followed by The Box, episode 17, which doesn't seem to have anything to do. It'll be followed by Crisis on Naboo, Massacre, Bounty. I think that one's all about Jerry. Episode 21, Brothers, which says Savage Opress returns with Darth Maul, his brother, and they plan their attack on the Jedi Temple on March 2nd. And then Revenge, episode 22, on March 9th, as Darth Maul and Savage Opress attack the Jedi Temple, Obi-Wan and Mace Windu evacuate younglings while Anakin confronts Maul in a duel that leads him to the dark side of the Force. Spoiler alert. Oh, I did that wrong, didn't I?
Wow.
You're supposed to say the spoiler first.
Yeah, because I didn't read all that before. I did not know. You know, who would have thought that Anakin's going to touch the dark side of the Force?
You mean this week? So it'll be interesting to see how all those play out.
But that's pretty cool if they're going to ransack the Jedi Temple.
Yes, and maybe we sense a season-ending cliffhanger.
That'll give a chance for Jakaas Sanu to get back in the fighting spirit if they try to get in the library, right?
Dear God,
her death.
Really?
That'd be a great duel, Savage versus...
the librarian.
If I can't beat you with a lightsaber, it doesn't exist.
Okay, well, all right, I want to thank Jen, Jonathan, and Baron for joining me to talk about Deception, and thank everybody for tuning in to hear us, and we will be back next week to talk about Friends and Enemies. See you all then.
See you next time.
Take care, everyone.
Have a good week, my fellow Swanlings, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.
Season 4, episode... That's not right. It's not episode 10. What episode is this? That's crazy talk.
It's episode 15.
Episode 15. I don't know why this says 10. That's just wrong. Deception is going to lead us, I think, into a very dark place over the next 4 weeks. Thank you, Arnie, for emailing me back right now. And me not being muted. Sorry, I should have muted that. There we go. Ahsoka. Try that without the dog. With the yard, or actually, I guess it's after the yard. It's, see how my prison lingo is? Yeah. The next day in the...
Coruscant. This is a local kind of facade. Is that a word, facade?
I think you're trying to say facade.
Facade. Yes, Coruscant. They did have that same gel. You would think that when Obi-Wan picked up the phaser that he could change it to stun.
Don't
right?
you ever say phaser in this podcast again.
That's a retake. Come on, we need a retake on that.
Corey Burton doing Cad Bane and the I can never say those things. The shark thing, Jen.
Kakaradon.
Thank you. See, Jen can say it. Why can't I say it? Yes.